Hi everyone, and welcome back to another session of Seller Speak. Today we are going to talk about sourcing, and not just product sourcing. We have logistic management, things that you need to do for preparing for Chinese New Year, and we're going to talk about how the supply chain has been disrupted by COVID. So this session is going to be your only sourcing guide that you need for 2021. So tune in and watch the entire video for useful tips. Everyone, I'm Riya Mittal, and welcome back to another session of Seller Speak. We have a very special speaker with us today. His name is Francois Jeffrey. Did I get that right?
Francois Jeffrey. Yes.
Jeffrey. Close. Yeah. So he is actually the director of business development in Novaland, and he also holds a degree in engineering from West Virginia, which is really exciting. And now he talks to a lot of Amazon sellers on a daily basis. So his company deals with sourcing, which he's going to talk more about. So Francois, what does Novaland do?
Francois, close again.
I'm trying.
No worries. Novaland is essentially a supply chain solution where we work with businesses of all sizes, including Amazon sellers and just e-commerce sellers in general, to help them more effectively manage their supply chain. It's sort of this factory-to-door service where a new business or a new Amazon seller or even established Amazon sellers can come onto our platform, and they can source their products from pre-vetted factories that are primarily located in China for now. And we oversee the entire process, of course, with our team. So we have product specialists, factory specialists, order managers, quality control inspectors, basically this team of experts, right, that come together to work with these Amazon sellers and really help them successfully source their products. And then overseeing production, overseeing the sample phase, adjustments, key quality indicators for the QC inspections. And then that last leg of really logistics and logistics management, which is so important. And I'm glad that we're going to be touching on it today, too. And then all the way to fulfillment, which is something fairly new to us. But the fulfillment side is something where we just see as a booming industry. It's definitely not going to go away anytime soon. I think if anything, COVID has emphasized or really brought to life this 3PL and fulfillment management business.
Yep. And I like how Novaland deals with people who are just starting out in Amazon and do the power sellers, because in my experience, I've seen a lot of beginner sellers, when they scale up, they need to outsource a lot of their logistic management. And it just gets easier when you have someone like Novaland take care of your relationship building with your suppliers. So I like how the whole process is very streamlined. So yeah. Also, I liked when you touched upon COVID, because of COVID, a lot, not only Amazon, but of course, sourcing has been disrupted in a way. The supply chain has been obviously disrupted. So now that we're at the peaks of Q4 this year, I think it's going to be very interesting on how sourcing is going to be for next year. And now that we have Chinese New Year come up, which is so, so important if you're trying to look for products or if you're trying to look for a new product. So Francois. I will get this right by the end of the session. So Francois Perfect. Is going to be talking a lot about Chinese New Year as well. So keep an eye out on that. And then we have also seen a lot of penetration in e-commerce market from the US market. So we have also seen like how brick and mortar stores are now, shifting to e-commerce platform. So you're right in saying that, you know, Amazon is not going anywhere when it comes to COVID, and it is still going to thrive in the future. So coming to the first question. So we have seen that COVID has disrupted the Amazon supply chain, and we see that we actually in seller app saw spikes in few of the sales that our sellers made, and they were able to keep up with the demand. But some of the sellers, unfortunately, were not able to keep up with the demand. So how do you stop that from happening? So do you source extra product, or how does the process work?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And it's a question that in large part is because of this just-in-time or lean manufacturing process, which has sort of been brought to life by Toyota back in the late 1900s. But it's this concept where a business should only be ordering as much inventory as they can sell within a short amount of time. So running very lean, running very efficient, not keeping too much inventory. Now, the downside to that is that if there are any unexpected, surge in sales, or if there's a disruption in the supply chain, that throws the entire process out of whack, right? Because they all link to each other. If you don't have products on the water or traveling to your warehouse and you run out of inventory, you can't sell anything. If you don't sell anything, you don't have money to reorder from your manufacturers, and it just keeps going down the line. And so whenever a business is really facing these stockout issues, which is a great problem to have, but a problem nonetheless, I think it's at that point to really consider, for one, ordering more products, but secondly, also finding partners that can help you store those products and sort of manage that aspect of the supply chain successfully. So you can work with 3PL or fulfillment centers here in the US. You can work with them in the country of origin, whether that be, you know, India or China or Vietnam or wherever it may be. And rather than paying, you know, for shipping 1,000 units here, where typically you might do a 500, you order the 1,000, you keep 500 there, you keep five, and then you have 500 coming here. And now whenever you are running low on inventory and you're able to sort of forecast, hey, you know, these are some peak shopping times where they're going to be buying my product, or it might be a seasonal product, or it might be something that's more trendy. Then you get that product, the other 500 inventory on the water, getting them shipped to, could be a 3PL in the US or wherever you're selling, could be directly to Amazon FBA. But at that very moment, also talking to your manufacturer and letting them know, hey, this is a problem that I'm encountering. And they're going to recognize it's a good problem to have. You know, you're running out of inventory means your sales are going well. And they'll try to find solutions with you. Maybe they'll manufacture an extra, you know, 5% and be able to ship those via Express Air. There's so many different methods to actually do it. I guess it's really what's best for that business. Do they have the capital to order more inventory? Do they expect those sales to keep surging after the fact? So these are a few questions they also need to ask themselves.
Yep. And I think it also gets very important to maintain a really good relationship with your supplier then, because it's in times of these emergency situations that you actually can get help from your supplier. So coming to expanding, so do you think it's a good idea to have your boots on the ground for the supply chain idea?
100%. So when it comes to expansion, the only way you could truly expand is by developing proper relationships. So I know what a lot of businesses tend to do, particularly the enterprise or the brick and mortar businesses. They'll have these, purchasing managers or procurement teams, right, that work with establishing the relationships with their suppliers. And if any issues come up, they will reach out to them and try to figure out a solution together. That's not so much something I see from Amazon sellers. For some reason, I think it might just be, typically a purchasing manager has a supply chain management background or experience in it, or they went to school for something related to it. So they have a little bit more experience in those regards, and really understand the value of that relationship. But when it comes to Amazon sellers, there's a few solutions to the expansion. One is to build a relationship yourself, maintain it, learn the factory owner's kids' names, learn what they like to eat, learn everything about them, and regurgitate that as much as you can. Check in, ask them, hey, how are your kids doing? I saw that there was a spike within your city. I hope you're staying safe. In some instances, you can offer them, like a red envelope, which is a little gift during Chinese New Year. These are a few ways to build that relationship. And when you plan to expand, it's not necessarily taking it from the approach of, hey, I'm expanding, I want a cheaper price. It's, hey, I'm expanding, I want you to expand with me. And how can I do that? I can do that by lowering my prices a little bit, but ordering higher volumes. How can we work on this together? And they could say, hey, your volume just isn't enough. Let's say you're going from 200 to 500 units. It might not just be enough. But if you're going from 500 to 2,000, that might be another consideration for the factory. They can say, look, they've ordered three times. I can't lower their price, but what I could do is help them with cash flow so I can offer them better payment terms. But none of this is possible without establishing that relationship early on. And I've seen far too many sellers damage that relationship by just approaching them and saying, hey, look, this is exactly what I need, take it or leave it, or being very aggressive in their approach for it, and saying, look, you have to lower it by 5%. Just like any relationship, there needs to be a lot of give and take, right? It's almost like a marriage. You take as much as you can give. Otherwise, it's just not going to work out. So I think that has to be recognized, and that has to be recognized very early on once you decide this is going to be my supplier and I'm going to rely on them to keep my inventory at a high quality level, work with me through problems, not just abandon them when there is a problem, right, on both sides. And that's how you can expand, really. They will work with you if you really do establish that relationship with them.
Yep. And I have also seen in my personal experience that when you have a good relationship with your supplier, the quality of your items that you get are better. Like, it's just easier to get your quality check done because you have that assurance and then you have that trust that you've built with your supplier. So I think that gets much easier as well. And I've also noticed that it's better to be proactive rather than reactive, because in Seller App, we do the same thing. You know, you have to plan everything, and rather than, you know, being in the situation and then finding a solution for yourself. Like, as I mentioned, during COVID, we saw most of the sellers do not have inventory to fulfill. So what do you think about the whole proactive versus reactive situation?
Yeah, it's hard to be proactive when you're on the other side of the world. And you just touched a little bit on it about having boots on the ground and the importance of it. And that's where you can rely on a partnership with, let's say, a sourcing agent or a sourcing company. Or if you already have a great relationship with your supplier, then you can almost have your representative be your advocate in some instances. If you treat them well, they will treat you well. But for some of those stockouts and some of those issues, again, it just all goes back to relationship. And if you can't establish that and it's hard for you to maintain, there's the option of outsourcing that itself. Right. So you can outsource to a virtual assistant, for example, and they can maintain that relationship with your suppliers.
So I really like the term outsourcing that you used in that sentence, because as a business owner, we understand that you have a lot of things in mind, and it's always a good idea to outsource things for your Amazon needs as well. So for PPC, you have repricing, and then you have keyword indexing, and there's so much that goes into an Amazon business. So I think it's always a good idea, especially when you're scaling from a beginner to an advanced seller, outsource your Amazon help as well. So that's why we have Seller App with our free tools and not so free tools if you want more help in your business. So do check them out. And yeah, coming to the next question, I was talking to one of my sellers, my seller friends, and they told me that it's a really good idea that you diversify your products when you start, like, you know, selling on Amazon for quite a while. And is it a good idea to diversify now that we know that because of COVID, things are moving very slowly? And if I'm ordering something from China, it's taking months and months to reach me. So do you think it's a really good idea to diversify in this condition right now?
I think diversification is always a good idea, whether that's with your suppliers, whether that's with your freight, 3PL, you know, the product offerings, whatever the case may be. Diversification is always a great idea, but you have to do it properly. If you don't build a solid foundation on that diversification, it's going to fail, right? Because there's just more pieces to manage. If you can't manage each piece effectively, the next link in that supply chain is going to fail, whether that's sales, whether that's marketing, whether that's inventory management. So when you're sort of talking about diversification when it comes to the different processes, I think it comes with this stigma and sort of the outsourcing aspect also is included with it. It comes with the stigma that it's going to be very easy. It's going to be done for me almost. Which is not really the case. You have to have, I just touched on having that solid foundation, but also having the right capital, right? And that's not approaching another factory saying, oh, I want 100 units of this because I'm selling 5,000 units of that. They get approached with that all the time, particularly when it comes to sourcing. No seller is really different than the next unless they can show them screenshots about, hey, this is the past 5 years I've gone from 1 million to 10 million with these sorts of margins. Or if they have a great relationship with them, then they're able to diversify the products within that same supplier, which is the best case scenario, right? Now, one thing to also consider when it comes to sourcing and diversification is the use of trade agents. And trade agents, they have their pros and their cons. Sometimes some of their cons are that they don't have the best after-sale support, or they may not be the most honest when it comes to not just saying, hey, I'm a trade agent, not a factory. But they can be a great tool for diversification because they usually can carry a catalog of products. So let's say you're selling pots and pans, right? A natural next progression might be kitchen utensils, which is a super saturated market, but that is another product that you might want to get into. And so when you get into that type of diversification, a trade agent might say, okay, I have these different factories for you. I can help you actually ship all these different items as well. So I guess to go back to your point, diversification is a great idea. In short, it's a great idea. It's all about how you do it, though. You don't do it properly, your business could suffer from it.
Yes, and how does Noviland help in this situation where you need trade agents or something? Do you have a person who takes care of that?
Yeah, so we don't have trade agents within our network itself. We only work with medium to large size factories, but when it comes to diversification, we try to make it as simple for any company as possible because no company should really be a one-trick pony. Who knows what's going to happen, whether it's a trade war, whether it's just the product itself is just not popular anymore and you lose that traction, your whole business suffers, right? So we have, going back to that team of experts, everyone within the product and factory specialist category is assigned a specific category or specialty, right? So someone that's working on baby products might not be working on kitchen and homeware, and they might not be working on furniture. And so no matter what those products are, they can approach us within our platform, Noviland.com. They submit their RFQ, RFQ being a request for a quote. And again, no matter what the product is, we will give it our best try. We'll see, hey, do we have a factory for you? But before even that, we'll see, hey, is this really the best next move? And is this something that we can service? So, of course, if it's 100, 200 units, it's not necessarily something we can do. It's something a lot of trade agents on Alibaba definitely could do. And they could help you sort of test that market. But whenever you're confident in a product and you say, hey, this is something I want to scale up and find a reliable factory for, a true factory, they can come onto our platform and just submit the RFQ. You know, we can either have a great factory for them or we let them know we don't. That's just the reality of it, right? We don't have an endless supply of factories, but we try to cover as many categories as possible.
Yeah, that sounds very convenient, actually. And when it comes to Alibaba, I have a really good news for you watchers or people who are watching right now out there. So keep an eye out for a special announcement that I might cover anytime during the session. So you have to watch the whole session. All right. So coming to the next question, now that we have dealt with sourcing and logistics, now we want to talk about a little bit about storage and deliveries. So there are two options that Amazon sellers have. They can either go FBA or FBM. So I just want to understand how sourcing works for FBM sellers.
Yeah, so I think one thing that COVID really brought to light and that I touched on very early on of this podcast even, is that 3PLs and fulfillment centers are a booming industry, particularly in the US. So we saw Amazon itself start throttling Amazon sellers' inventory levels, and they raised the IPI score that they actually had to maintain. I think they raised it to about 500. And so just based on these two, I guess, issues that came from COVID specifically. It just goes to show how risky the supply chain really is when you are that one-trick pony, when you only have it within Amazon fulfillment centers and you're relying on them to take care of every step of the process. And this goes back to diversification. Diversifying the methods in which you can fulfill to your network is important. So that's where third-party logistics centers, or 3PLs, as they commonly go by, are a great tool, whether that's on the West Coast, whether that's, you know, down south, maybe in Texas, that can hit a lot of the Southwest and Southeast region fairly quickly, or having them on the East Coast. Where there's a lot of major cities and you can typically have 2-3 day shipping lead time. But that helps FBA sellers and just Amazon sellers in general, because they are able to create two different listings, one FBA and one FBM. And that FBA listing should always be the go-to. You should always try to funnel as much traffic into that FBA listing as possible. That way, you know, they see the Prime badge, so quick checkout, quick sale. FBM should really be the backup. If that FBA listing starts to run out of inventory, or, you know, the best problem to have, it runs completely out of inventory. You just turn on that FBM listing, have it run in the background. It will catch that buy box because it's the same ASIN. But you'll have your third-party logistics center fulfill those orders for you. And a lot of times they have great partnerships with shipping carriers, whether that's FedEx, UPS, USPS. And they'll fulfill those for you. You just have to enter in all the proper information. So talk to them about, you know, how long is this realistically going to take to process? You know, if I send it to you at 6 p.m., will you ship it out the next day? Can you ship it out the same day? And include a buffer. I would always include 1 to 2 days in Amazon, where Amazon asks you, what is that FBM lead time or processing time? And from there, it's just as important to understand the downsides of having an FBM listing and working with third-party logistics centers. And one of the major downsides is that you have more steps that you really have to manage in terms of logistics.
Yep.
Right? So you have to have the product shipped to Amazon FBA for the fulfillment centers there to actually fulfill your orders. But then you also have that for the third-party logistics centers. Now, for Amazon FBA, they usually have great partnerships with just about all the trucking companies where they can drop off their products. You don't get charged, you know, an overnight storage fee. You could even use their partner shipping, what's it called? I think it's partner shipping carrier plan or something along those lines. I think they had it with UPS before. I'm not sure how it's working out now. You use that and to fulfill it to Amazon, but to your 3PLs, you have the potential of being charged last minute fees, right? So yep. You have to take into consideration the unloading charge, because every 3PL is going to have that. Best case scenario, your products are palletized, they're properly labeled at the source, which is something that we also do at Noviland for all the sellers. We make sure that it's taken care of at the factory pre-QC inspection. And then we include that in the report. But they have the unloading charge. They have, you know, some 3PLs have a stocking fee. So if you wanted to actually fulfill them through that 3PL, they would have to stock them and then have them ready to fulfill. Otherwise, there might be a long-term storage fee where you just use that inventory to fulfill FBA. Rather than, you know, shipping direct to consumer, you're running low on inventory in FBA, create a shipping plan, and then ship a portion of that inventory from your 3PL location to Amazon FBA. That's another option. And
I think, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think that's also going to solve when you're running low on your supply or inventory, like we mentioned during that happened with a lot of sellers during COVID. So I think what you mentioned right now is going to help that scenario as well, to keep it under control. So, at SellerUp, we believe that you need to have FBA and FBM, both accounts, and you obviously have different listing for both. So I'm just trying to understand how I can connect that to this. And I think this is perfect to help Amazon sellers not run low on their inventory ever again.
Yeah, Yeah, no, without a doubt. Going back to diversification, 3PLs and fulfillment centers can help you also diversify to other marketplaces, right? So Amazon Marketplace is great, has probably the largest pie in e-commerce. But then you also have Walmart Marketplace, you have Target Marketplace, you have Wayfair, Home Depot. There's so many other sites, Etsy, eBay. It goes back to diversification, and you can only open that door when you have the right relationship with the right 3PL and fulfillment center. Just tying all that back together.
Now we're coming to the most important part of sourcing, which is Chinese New Year. So when is Chinese New Year to begin with?
Yeah, so that starts February 12th. Technically, it's supposed to be about a week, but it lasts. If you look at the supply chain, it really started about a month and a half ago. It started at the beginning of October. And we kind of had this long peak season, even going through June. That was very unexpected because, you know, the global economy shut down and manufacturing slowed down, and then it picked back up. And then you started seeing that purchasing managers index, or the PMI, within supply chain start to go back up to above 50, which 50 is sort of that baseline where a country isn't necessarily growing, or the economy isn't forecasting a healthy economy the next month compared to the previous month. And as we see all this picking up, we see June, July, August staying in this peak season, slowing down a little bit going into Golden Week. And then October, it just started picking up. Everyone is placing their orders. We're seeing larger orders here at Novaland also, because everyone wants to have it last until, in some instances, next summer. They want to have enough inventory until next summer. Mainly because, you know, Chinese New Year starts in February. Factory workers start to leave in late January. And realistically, mm-hmm. they won't be coming back until late February, if they come back at all.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure that this has been, it's not going to be same as last year. There are going to be massive delays, and there are going to be a lot of mitigated risk involved as well. So, if you already haven't started planning for Chinese New Year, what can you do to start preparing right now?
Yeah. So it's close to the end of November. It's a tough time to start sourcing. It's never a bad time to start sourcing, but it's a tough time to start sourcing. Factories are definitely going to be looking for the larger orders, the more established requests for quotes, the ones that they can take a little bit more seriously and answer less questions to. So the more that you ask of a supplier, going back to relationships, the more that you ask of them, the more reluctant they're going to be to even work with you. It's kind of like going into a relationship. You see someone that's very needy, you're like, is that something I want to deal with? They can kind of toss it, exactly, push it to the side, toss your hands up. I don't think so, buddy. And so they look at it in a very similar way. They don't want to work with someone that's asking a million questions and has a $2,000 budget. They want to work with someone that has, you know, a $5,000 to $10,000 budget, which we saw our factory average go from 3 to 5,000 pre-COVID to 5 to 8,000 today in terms of average order sizes starting out. They wanted to take on, but they're looking for those orders because they take you more seriously. They're not dying for the business, right? So if you come to them with a concept, they're going to say, okay, my options are I put my engineers on top of this project, I develop it, and we have a $3,000 order, or I work with this guy that has a $5,000 order, has all the product specifications. You know, he has a 2,000 unit order initially, and he's easier to work with. Who are they going to pick? They're going to pick the $5,000 order every time, right? So it's important to understand that the more prepared that you are when it comes to approaching them, that's doing your homework on the product, doing your homework on the budget, the target pricing, the materials, all these different aspects, including the packaging, and making the suppliers' jobs and lives as easy as possible. You kind of want to honeypot them a little bit. If you're not the most savvy when it comes to product, still try to include as much information as possible, make their lives easier. They in turn will make your life easier. They will give you better pricing. They will make sure that your products could be manufactured honestly before Chinese New Year. come to them with a not so put together idea, they might say, yeah, we might be able to get it done before Chinese New Year. We might not. But you're left lingering and you have a long maybe when you should really just be looking for that very early no. No, we can't get it done, but realistically, we can't get it done. Not, yeah, we might be able to get it done. And then January rolls around. They say, oh, you know, it's been really hard to get the materials or truckers or the pricing is up, so I have to raise the price. You want someone that can tell you honestly and upfront. And that's what we're all about here at Noviland. We try to really be proactive in all of our outreach and in, you know, if we can't find the right factory or if the project just isn't the right fit for us, instead of being reactive, which is a horrible experience where you, down the road you just find out, hey, I just wasted so much time when I could be looking in India or I could be sourcing in Vietnam or on Alibaba. Yeah. So it's all about experience. It's all about relationships. Establish those, and you can still source pre-Chinese New Year.
Yeah, and I think the most selling, one of the most vast categories on Amazon is home and appliances or home and kitchen. And I've noticed a lot of products there are very complicated to make, right? So if your product is complicated, I think it's a very good idea to give like break down your product and talk to your supplier honestly, because if your product is complicated, your supplier might make a mistake or two in the beginning. So you have to give yourself enough time to get that product rectified, do quality checks, regular quality checks. And if it's just a complicated product, make sure that you're giving like every blueprint to your supplier, because I've seen a lot of sellers who are very reluctant, thinking that they're going to get like steal the idea or something like that might happen. And I'm like, but then how are you going to get your product made if you're not ready to give all of the things to your supplier? I swear, you know, that's what I'm happy that Noviland is doing, all of these things to like, you know, get in the middle and sort out all these communication gaps and things that might go wrong. So, yeah.
Well, can I add to that? So please, you mentioned all the very right things about getting, you know, if it's complicated, getting all the right materials, but also setting the right expectations, right? Yep. If you have a customized product, no matter how simple or easy that customization might seem, you should anticipate paying for molding and tooling and not expect the factory to invest that for you. Because at the end of the day, you haven't proven anything to them. It's kind of like going to a restaurant and saying, hey, I'm a taste tester and I will leave you a great review and you're going to get millions of customers because of my great review. I promise. It's just not going to work, right? They're going to be like, you could buy a plate and test it yourself or taste it yourself. And if you like it, you leave us a review. Very similar with factories. Don't expect them to give you anything for free. This is a relationship and this is an investment. Right, it's not a transaction. You're not buying 1,000, pop sockets to use 1,000 pop sockets. You're buying them to resell them and to make a profit. So it's an investment. Whether or not you want to invest that money is completely up to you. But you should analyze it and proceed with every step as if, you know, hey, I'm spending $200 on this sample. I expect to make $200 in the first 150 units. Look at an investment and look at the tooling and molding and samples and shipping and QC, all these different expenses as investments, because it's not for consumers.
Yeah, very well said. I mean, why would you even expect your factory to pay for the molds if you're the
You'd
one who's
surprised.
Asking for customization? Oh, wow.
You'd be very surprised.
Okay, so now is the time when I talk about the special announcement by SellerApp. So SellerApp has teamed up with Alibaba. Yes, we're partners. And you can keep an eye out for our new tool, that's product sourcing tool. So if you're looking to diversify a product or if you're looking to get a new product to sell on your Amazon, check out our free tool. It's also free. Did I mention that? So yes, check out our free tool. It's going to be out very soon. We're having a special launch for it. So keep an eye out on all our social media platforms for the special launch. And we have made your sourcing product needs easier. So back to you, Francois. This is a very common question that we get, you know. So we have obviously established that when a company is scaling, when an Amazon business is scaling, that's when they outsource their logistics and a lot of help from other third-party people who are ready to help them with the services. But how do you know that you're ready to outsource your logistics? Like, how does that happen? When is the correct time to get that done?
That's a great question. Particularly when it comes to logistics, but also when it comes to sourcing or really any other operation, right? And I think that every person, first of all, they're wearing a ton of hats, right? They're the CEO and founder of their own company. They're a product developer. They're a product researcher. They're a marketer. They're a product sourcing agent. They are running all these different processes within their own company to start out on Amazon. So in regards to outsourcing, and particularly outsourcing with logistics, I think that comes once you start noticing mistakes. Because there's always going to be mistakes, there's always going to be issues that come within the supply chain, that's natural. But once you start to notice them, and once it starts to really hit you that, hey, I don't want to deal with that, or this is a problem that keeps occurring, I think that is the right time to go ahead with the outsourcing. You should always be looking at how can I make these processes more efficient from the very beginning, whether that's logistics, whether that's sourcing. But that's when you should really take action, when you start to notice those issues, when you start to notice, hey, I'm getting great rates for my freight forwarder, but I'm paying $5,000 in accessorial charges. So that could be, demurrage. It could be truck waiting because your trucker has to sit at the 3PL for a long time because they didn't coordinate well with the time of delivery. There's definitely look up what accessorial charges are before working with any 3PL. It's important to know. And it's something, we talked about collaborating a little bit. I'll definitely actually include that in a blog or something. And I'll let you know where that is.
Okay.
Hopefully it's on the Seller App website, but we will include what accessorial charges are, particularly when it comes to logistics, because going cheap is never a good idea, first of all. But if you can't manage the logistics effectively, you are going to result in thousands of dollars of charges, at the very minimum, a few hundred dollars every order from poor planning, particularly in peak season. So outsourcing that to a supply chain professional, where they can oversee it, they can be proactive in reaching out to the freight forwarders, they can be proactive with reaching out to the trucking companies, to the fulfillment centers that you're partnering with, and coordinating all of them effectively. It's a lot of work, and it's a full-time position even. Once you start to notice some of those mistakes and you start paying a few thousand dollars, you're going to realize that, hey, I could, invest a few hundred dollars in outsourcing these processes to have someone manage it. And that's something that we do here at Noviland also. We manage everything between our own teams and the connectivity between logistics team and the fulfillment team. It needs to be very tight. And if you have any sort of loose relationship between the two, that's where you will see that impact of the different accessorial charges.
Yeah, and what are the costs involved with the 3PL sellers? I mean, 3PL when you're outsourcing it.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's the receiving charge. There's, the stocking fees. There's labeling fees. If you need FBA prep, I suggest doing it at the source always, but sometimes that's just not an option. So there's FBA prep fees. It could be based on man hours. It could be based on the labeling. There's palletization fees if you're forwarding it to Amazon. Every 3PL is going to be built differently, but these are some of the basic ones. And then there's the fulfillment fees. A lot of them base it on weights. Or dimensional weight sometimes, and it's based on whoever their partner is. It could be whether it's FedEx or UPS. So just out of experience, I know that we have FedEx and UPS as two of our close partners when it comes to shipping. We get like insanely cheaper rates than you would if you're shipping it yourself from your own house. And we can pass along those savings to all of our customers when it comes to fulfillment and 3PL. And not only that, we have next day shipping times. So when you weigh those benefits, we might be let's say, a few pennies more expensive than a 3PR fulfillment center that you're currently working with, but you say, hey, okay, their processing times are quicker, their shipping labels are cheaper, their communication is better, they let me know if there's actually an issue, they count the boxes as soon as they receive them. You're not going to know all of this experience by just reading a review. You actually have to test it out. And so it's something where get references if you can when it comes to 3PLs. Get their pricing sheet. Try to negotiate that pricing sheet if possible if you're a large enough seller. If you're moving less than 1,000 units, I would say less than 1,000 units a week, I would just go with whatever their rates are. It's not going to be enough to impact the pricing that they give you. And just going back to relationships, just build that relationship with them. Right? Whoever the point of contact is, again, learn their kids' names, learn what they like, reach out to them. Who's their favorite sports team? Do a quick checkup on, you know, how the Steelers are doing, if they like the Steelers. And just communicate. Be real. They're human. You're human. Every step of the process, without a relationship, that foundation is really going to crumble.
The next question that most of our sellers usually have is, do I go to a sourcing company or do I go to marketplace to look for suppliers? So I think it's really a good idea to get yourself a sourcing company, because then you get like experts, or just outsourcing in general. That's when you get like expert doing your job for you. So you know that you can never go wrong in that field. And then that's why you have SellerApp and Novaland, who are here to create an environment that helps you look for all these services, whether it's PPC, sourcing, supply relationship. We all help you get where you want to be in your Amazon journey. So what, according to you, is a right choice for sellers to make, a sourcing company or a marketplace to look for suppliers?
That is the million-dollar question. It's a very tricky question because everyone has different experiences, as well as different capitals and budgets and, even time and resources to invest into it. I've seen sellers that only work directly with manufacturers. They only find them on Alibaba, and they have been wildly successful. But what they won't tell you, and you know, you might have seen them in a YouTube video or ad or someone selling a course. But what they don't tell you is they travel to the factory, or